Hey, this week on The Nerdy Rat, we're going to be talking about our new rats, traveling with our kitten, talking raccoons, alien prequels, and more. It is Thursday, the 25th.
Yes, May 25th.
Here we go. Welcome, everybody, to the Nerdy Rat. I'm Matt.
I'm Liz.
And we're running about a week late this time around. Podcast. I think my goal is to... I was thinking the goal should be around two podcasts a month. And we had a vacation, and we were going to do it earlier, but then we wanted to wait for Guardians to come out.
Yeah, so, you know.
Our vacation fell last week, so.
Stuff happens. So anyway, about every 2 weeks, that's what our tag will be. About every two weeks.
I think I listed it as twice monthly, so we're going to shoot for that.
So anyway, here we are, back to podcasting. So we have our new rat, Toro, who we were talking about last podcast. We finally got him introduced into the whole mischief.
Yeah, I think it took a long time. Full 2 weeks of intros going back and forth.
Yep.
At one point, I think we moved the girls back into his cage for a little bit.
Yeah, so what we had done is, you know, we had given them all playtime inside our Great Wall, which is the big plastic play wall that they can play inside.
The play area.
Yeah, the play area. So at that point, everyone was getting along great. So we put them in the cage with everybody. Well, it was too soon, apparently, because he got really intimidated by one of the other little girls, Pinky. And I think the problem was she got scared by him. She and her little baby sisters are all pretty skittish ratties. And so I think she got a little startled by him, and then she kind of bucked at him. He didn't like that, so he got very scared and depressed for a few minutes. Then he decided to assert himself by attacking her. So I...
Well, we don't know if he ever actually attacked
him. Yes, he did. I was right here.
Did he attack
him?
Yes. I thought he attacked Pinky. He was just grooming him, and they were being dramatic.
No. The first time... This was when you were sleeping. The first time, the reason why I separated him out in the first place was because he attacked Pinky. He really attacked her and went after her. And so I had to separate them. And at that point, I put them both in the bonding pouch with me to see if I could get them to make up and get along and get over it. So they did seem to calm down after a few minutes, and things were going well, so I put him back in the main cage. Well, 5 minutes later, he attacked her badly again. Not to the point of drawing blood or anything, but I broke them up. So then I was like, all right, Tora, this is too soon for you. You got to go back into your own cage for a little while.
And at that point, we stepped back and... Mm-hmm. He was in his cage for a few more days. And
during that time, we were doing a lot of bonding pouch activities with him and Peter and Fievel, who he was getting along with. So we just kind of needed him to get acclimated to being with other rats.
I think he was kind of an extreme case, too, because he had spent so much of his life without any other rats. So he wasn't sure how to behave around other rats.
Right.
And we also had boys and girls, which
he
seemed to be more okay with the boys and more standoffish with the girls.
But see, I think part of the problem is that our four babies, who are not really babies anymore, but they were Nim's babies, they're very skittish girls. They've always been skittish. They're a lot better than they were when they were younger. But I think they just kept getting startled by him really easily. And then he was skittish, too, because he's never lived with other rats. So it started feeding the problem. So what we started doing was we did a lot of daily playtime in the Great Wall with the whole pack together, which he did better at. He was leaving Pinky alone with that because she could avoid him, you know, and feel safe enough. And then what I realized eventually was that he really wanted to go into the main cage. Like, I had him in the bonding pouch, and I was opening the door to get Peter or Fievel out, and he jumped into the main cage because we've had their two cages pushed up real close next to each other so they could sniff each other and he could see them. So I was like, well, he's clearly ready to go back in the cage, but I didn't want him to attack Pinky again. So what I did is I took everybody out, put them all in the Great Wall, And then I had this idea. I was like, you know what? I think he should be in the cage, the big cage, with just the alphas, Tippy Toe and Nim, and the boys, Peter and Fievel. And then he can get used to just being in the cage, and he can get used to being in a rat pack without having the drama of the little babies.
And so we took all the girls and put them in his cage.
Exactly.
And then for a little bit, we took Fievel and put him in with the girls because I think he would prefer to hang out with the girls. Then.
Well, Fievel loves everybody, but I think he missed them. Well, I think they missed him and he
Fievel
missed them.
Fievel is always the one that like I'll see in the igloo with two of the most shy girls.
Mm-hmm. They really like him because he's a very shy and submissive ratty. He causes no problems. He's kind of very similar to Athena in that respect. Like he is just... the little quiet ratty who doesn't want to cause any trouble. So they kind of like him. Yeah. So I think it really helped because I think because we hadn't cleaned the cages in between, the girls got used to Toro's scent because they were living in his cage. Toro got used to their scent because he was living in their cage. But he also got used just to being in a bigger cage and exploring it and feeling comfortable with it. And he got used to being with Nim. And him and Nim had a couple scuffles at first. But what really warmed my heart was that like Nim and him tussled for a minute. But then a few minutes later, he came over to her to see her to kind of make up. And she started licking him. And he was so happy because he's never had that since he was a baby. He's never been had another rat groom him. And, you know, Nim has to be the mama alpha. So she's like, I lick you. You my ratty. I lick you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how when you have two rats that like go up against each other a lot, you'll notice like they'll tussle and then an hour later they'll be sleeping together in the hammock.
Yeah, so I think after a couple days, and we were still doing daily playtime with all the little girls too, so he would still get used to them. But then we'd separate them for like about 3 days. We still had them each in the separate cages, and then we were able to put the little girls back in with him, and we didn't clean the cage in between because I thought it would be better for him to still have their scents and still have the cage set up in the way that he had gotten used to.
I think the real important lesson with this too is to just be patient with new rats and don't push intros if the rats are getting aggressive. Maybe step back and try different approaches and don't get discouraged and don't give up. I think you can really introduce any rats to any other rats if you have the patience.
You have the patience
and the time to
if you're willing to put in the time. And like same thing, we had to supervise them a lot to make sure that they didn't kill each other and go after each other.
Yeah, this was even longer than when I had to introduce Jesse, and Jesse was really difficult. Yeah. And Jesse was to the point where I believe she was giving up because she didn't get along with other rats. So
yeah.
I think rats are naturally social, and they naturally live together. And
it's better for them. So even if they have trouble acclimating to it, it's probably because they've been de-socialized.
And when they don't see other rats as part of their colony, it's going to take time for them to accept each other. But just be patient when introducing new rats and be prepared for it to take time.
Exactly. Maybe longer than you'd like. But also try, like we said, like the different techniques, the bonding pouch, getting used to just one or two rats at a time.
If one approach isn't working, try something different.
Exactly.
And, switch it up.
Exactly. Because honestly, I just had an inspiration. When I saw that he wanted to go in the big cage, it just kind of dawned on me like, oh, he's so nervous about just being in the big cage by itself. And then he's also nervous about being with other rats. Let's kind of like that teacher in me was like, let's chunk this, so let's scale it back so he doesn't have to deal with everything all at once.
Yeah, I think him getting introduced to eight rats at once was a bit overwhelming for him.
It was.
Where when we scaled it back, it was a lot better. But he's happy now.
He snuggles with everybody
I cleaned both the cages today. So
we're ready
for some new fosters. I pick up some more litter. We'll be good to go. Was there anything else you want to say about Toro or?
No, just how happy I am. Maybe we can post a couple pictures of him in the igloo with the other ratties on the website.
Yeah, I'll have to put that.
Or on Twitter.
I got him on my phone so I can put him up on Twitter.
Because I love to see that he's doing, like, he's just so happy now. And he was so depressed when he first came to us. And it just makes me so happy that for the rest of his life, he's going to be loved and happy and socialized,
Yeah. So one quick thing here that I put on the outline I wanted to mention. I used to have a lot of problems with water bottles, with them leaking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one thing I've noticed is like, I found a way to like fill the plastic ones in a way where they won't leak.
Mm-hmm. And where did you figure that out? Online? Did you see a tip for that? Or?
I don't remember who told me. I think I read it online or something. But I used to use the glass ones, which I don't like the glass ones because you can't do this with them.
But okay, yeah.
The plastic ones, it's important that the rubber O-ring is in there. You want to make sure that's there.
Okay.
And what you do is you fill it up all the way to the top. As much as you can to the very top of it. And then you hold it level and squeeze it a little bit as you screw down the top. And then as soon as you got it tight, you can let it go. And then you'll hear kind of like a suction and then turn over immediately. And that should create a seal where it won't leak out. Because I've had a lot of problems with water bottles leaking.
We have. They leaked like all the time. And we thought maybe it was the brand of water bottle. Well, and we tried different ones.
I bought two of the expensive glass ones thinking they'd leak less, and they last for a little while and then they just started leaking again. So I think the way to go is the plastic ones, and
I agree. Just
and make sure the ring's good.
But yeah, once you showed me this little tip, like, we haven't had any problems with the water bottles leaking, and it's really cool. So it's like when he says you fill it up level, it's like you fill it up so that you've got that little curved bubble on the top
like
of it,
almost like a sphere on top
of it. Exactly. And then some of the water, a little bit of water is going to dribble out when you squeeze it as you put on the,
nozzle. It should drip a couple of times, but if you hold it, you should watch it. It should stop.
Right. And then it sucks all the air out to create that suction seal.
Yeah, the trick is to create that suction. The suction is what keeps it. And I just get they're like $6 at the pet store. You get the little plastic ones. And then if the O-rings go bad, just buy a new one because they're so cheap. That's my recommendation anyway.
Yeah, it's worked a lot better. We've had less floods in the rat cages since we started doing it this way. So, yay!
You can always, that smell of like the litter soaked in water.
Oh, yeah, it's so gross.
Like, it's so distinct. Like, you know when it's happened.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. So that's our rat care tip for the day.
And Liz found another cat.
Yes, because I have a big
heart.
What
was it, last week?
I think it was last
week.
Yeah,
I made dinner. I had dinner already.
I was teaching a piano lesson, and I was coming home from my lesson, and I saw a cat, and it looked very distressed. I mean, now I feel I have a somewhat psychic bond with animals, but it gave me the same look that lost puppy dog I found about 6 or 8 months ago gave me. It just looked distressed and in need. And the thing is, I've been teaching at the same I go to my students' houses. I've been teaching here for 4 years. I've never seen a cat in the courtyard. So I didn't think it was an outdoor cat. I'm like, this cat looks lost.
It didn't sound like it was behaving like a typical outdoor cat.
No, it didn't.
Also,
because I parked and got out of my car and it came right up to me. And I'm like, okay, so you clearly need some help. And this is my pet peeve with people. First of all, I don't believe in outdoor cats to begin with. They get more diseases. They're more likely to be hit by a car and killed. And also, if you are going to do an outdoor cat, you need to put a collar on it that specifically states, I am an outdoor cat and here's my address and chipped. But especially have a collar that says it's an outdoor cat, because otherwise someone like me doesn't know, is this a feral cat or is this a lost cat or is this an abandoned cat?
Not to mention in the majority of the United States right now, you probably have coyotes.
Exactly. We have coyotes and foxes in our
neighborhood. I was listening to this guy
talk
about how like coyotes have expanded now. Not 3 weeks ago, it sounded like a coyote and one of the
feral cats
killing each other outside.
Yeah. So it's like, it's so dangerous to have your cat be outdoors. So
in a lot of areas, it's
well,
not
that's
even legal.
The thing. In this particular city where I was teaching, which shall remain nameless, I happen to know they do have a local ordinance that prohibits outdoor cats.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, with my heart, I'm not going to leave a cat that I think might be in need outside to be lost and abandoned or whatever else it might be. be.
Also, if you have a cat that's just gonna wander up to people outside, and you know it does that, and you don't have a collar on it.
That's so irresponsible.
This is what's gonna happen to your cat.
Exactly. So I feel not bad at all, because we'll tell you the end of the story. So what happened was, I took the cat. I took it in the car with me. I didn't have a carrier, but I was like, I can't leave this here. I went to the local shelter, which was a city shelter, but they were closed because they're only open a few hours, a couple times a week for the public. So I took it down to the county shelter. Now, I'm going to say this is the responsible thing to do. I don't recommend kidnapping a cat, because it is possible it's lost, or it's possible it's an outdoor cat. It's possible somebody is looking for that cat. So I took it to the shelter. They scanned it for a microchip. It did not have one. I let them know that it might be a lost cat. I let them know where I found it. And I also called the local shelter, just because we happen to have that local one in the city, and said, hey, I found a cat. It looks like this. If somebody's looking for it, it's at the county shelter.
Yeah. 3 days later.
3 days go by before anyone even calls looking for the cat. I thought at that point it was surely abandoned, because who doesn't call when their cat goes missing? Even if it is an outdoor cat, who doesn't call the shelter to see if it's been hit by a car or something?
If my cat doesn't come home at the normal time that I would expect my cat to come home, I'm going to call the shelters, because that's where...
Right, but you wouldn't have an outdoor cat anyway.
That's where animals end up.
But yeah, seriously, I'm angry and appalled that 3 days went by before someone even called to look for the cat. But apparently they did pick it up, because it's no longer listed on the county shelter website. So... I'm pleased it's been reunited. I hope the city shelter chewed them out and told them they're not even legally allowed to have an outdoor cat in this particular city.
I hope so, but
I don't know. The city might have simply, but they might not have admitted it was an outdoor cat to the city shelter either. But I hope they learned a lesson. I really, truly do. Because it's just irresponsible all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And
also,
you know,
another thing about outdoor cats is you end up decimating the local songbird population.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because they go out and they hunt. Like, even if you feed them,
they're going to hunt.
They're going to hunt those birds, and they're going to catch them too.
Yeah. That's why coyotes are very good hunters.
That's why coyotes will kill them too, is because.
Kill the cats. Yeah.
They're not because, like, they're going to eat the cats, but because they're competitors for their food source.
Exactly.
So coyotes will normally only eat, like, mice and rats in the wild.
Uh huh.
But
cats or outdoor cats are also competing
for
that food.
But the cats will also compete for
exactly.
that food.
Exactly.
So they'll fight. Mm-hmm. They'll try and kill other cats.
Exactly. Because it's a competitive predator. So that's the moral of the story. I'm glad that the cat was okay. We would have tried really hard to get it into a rescue through the shelter. A lot of times the shelter can get the cats into rescues and can get them adopted.
Well, I think it helps that we're willing to pay the adoption fees and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we would have. And actually, they called me back and said there would not have been an adoption fee for this one because he was already neutered.
Yeah.
So, I still want to reiterate, even if they had to put this sweet cat down, that is a kinder life if it was lost or abandoned or, you know, just... Then having to fend for itself in the wild, you know, you shouldn't. And if it is somebody's pet, obviously they should have called to look for it. And they eventually did end up getting it. But I mean, if it was lost or if it was abandoned and it could not be found and it could not be adopted, it is just so much kinder than dying terrified and alone and afraid and getting killed out in the wild. So the point is it's humane. That's why often they call it a humane society, because the point is it's a humane way to care for animals, even through sometimes what has to be the end of their life. But we would have tried really hard to get them into a rescue. So
still better than
exactly
them outside.
Exactly. So anyway, glad that worked out well. But yeah, Matt had to eat his dinner. I said, go ahead and eat your dinner, because he had it all ready for me when I was going to come home from work.
I didn't even see your message.
I know. So I called him and I texted him.
Well, I was cooking.
I know you were cooking. I know. I felt bad.
Like,
but
I'm like, where is she? I need to check my phone. And I'm like, oh, damn it.
I know. I know, but you have a good heart, because you really were glad, I think, that I took the cat down to the shelter, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would have done.
Exactly. I know. That's why we're a good couple, because you would have done the same thing, and you do have the same heart and compassion for animals. So
do you want to talk about your Facebook group?
Well, it's not really a group, but so we've talked several times the last couple episodes about the DC Eagle Cam with the bald eagles and how there's bald eagle chicks, and we've posted a couple videos and stuff. Well, I came to stumble upon DC. It's the Washington, D.C. Eagle Cam Watchers Facebook page. And we're going to put a link to that on our site. So it is these people who do what I used to do with the baby panda bear at the National Zoo. There's a panda cam. And I used to take screenshots of the panda cam on my phone of my favorite little poses of the baby panda. And, you know, I'd save them because I loved them and they were so cute. So there's this whole Facebook page for people who do the same thing with the Eagle Cam. And not only do they take screenshots, some of them actually take their phones and film the live camera feed on their phone from the computer. And then they post like a video to the website. So I love it. I was like, this is the best thing ever. And if I had found a group like that for the baby pandas, and I'm sure there is one, I just didn't think to look for one. I would have totally joined that group.
There's a Facebook group for everything.
Yeah.
I had no idea that there were so many Facebook rat groups too. Like,
yeah, I started liking a couple, and then it started suggesting more in my feed for me to like. And I'm like, wow,
there's
I really have
There's several
no
that
idea.
Have over 5,000 members. Wow. And I was kind of, because I'm used to like going, like I try to frequent the R Rats community on Reddit.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
But yeah, I found that like before we were getting ready to start the podcast, I started seeing these rat Facebook groups. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, and what's pretty cool too is that in my feed, because I like several comic book artists and things like that, they actually started suggesting artists' pages to me who do rat art. So I actually now like a couple people in my feed who do rat art, and they're posting like different little rat illustrations every day. And it's so cool. I love it.
Yep. So Facebook's pretty cool for that.
Yeah, it's fun for what it's good for.
Yeah. It has its ups and downs.
Yes. So and you know, it's up to you to choose.
I've had to leave some of the rat communities on Facebook because of issues I had with some of their admins. But
yeah, well, and for me, yeah, we don't. But for me, I mean, I am a very abnormal Facebook user. I have hardly any friends, meaning I have like a total of 5, including Matt. And they're my high school friends who are still like my sisters at this point, 20 years later. And because the thing is, I don't want to have even acquaintances like on my feed, and I don't want to have to curate my feed like monitoring constantly. What do I want to share? What do I not want to share? Who do I want to share it with? I'm careful about my online privacy. So I prefer to mostly, but what I do appreciate with Facebook is not just being able to keep in touch with my high school friends, but I like being able to follow the different legitimate news feeds, or you know, the groups that I like or the artists that I like.
I post so infrequently. I don't really think about it that much.
I post a lot, but mostly what I post are things that I want to remember and have saved in my feed. Like if I find a cool link, I'm mostly posting it for myself because I want to save it in my feed so I can find it later.
Yeah. Could just, you know, keep notes.
Well, but then it's not as convenient.
I always end up emailing myself stuff.
But you know what? The problem is I never go through my emails then. And what I like on Facebook is that they've started doing like the memories from like on this day a year ago, on this day two years ago. Yeah. So then at least once a year I get reminded of the articles that I've saved and posted.
Like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that's pretty cool.
So one last thing to talk about
for animals.
We took Kitten, our cat. Cat named Kitten.
Yes. He's not
Although
a kitten
I
anymore.
Named him Tibbers when I got him. But
well, technically you named him Tiberius.
Well, no. I was going to name him Tiberius and call him Tibbers.
Uh-huh.
And I just call him Kitten all the time because I call all cats Kitten.
And so the
so
cat...
So Kitten just became his name.
Because that's what he responds to. I mean, that's what you call him all the time. So when I met Matt, he'd only had Kitten for a couple months. And so I had... was like, what's your cat's name again? And Matt explained to me. He's like, well, really it's Tibbers or Tiberius, but he thinks it's Kitten. Watch, I'm going to call him. And he was like, Kitten, come here. And Kitten came running over to him.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
He's sleeping right now. But,
obviously the cat thinks his name is Kitten. That's his name.
What we were going to say was we took him on vacation with us.
Yeah.
We went to the beach. It was cold and raining.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And
it was still fun.
It was though. It was a good drive. It was the longest drive he'd been on.
The previously we've taken him to Baltimore Comic Con the last 2 years, which is about an hour drive.
Yeah. This was
about he cried the whole time to Baltimore. So yeah, this was about 3 hours.
And he cried for the first hour.
For the first hour, and, but then nobody
Then he got tired.
Yep.
And then he just kind of went into his carrier and fell asleep.
It was so cute too, because I've seen toddlers like when they're trying to fight the sleepiness and like they really need to go down for a nap and they're so sleepy but they don't want to, and so they fight it and they fight it, and Kitten was doing the same thing. Like he really was sleepy and tired, yeah, and he did not want to go to sleep, so his fussing like temporarily increased, and then it was so cute because then all of a sudden he just is like, oh fine, and he just all by his little self he crawls into his carrier. Now I have never in my life seen him willingly go into that carrier ever. So it was so hilarious.
He'll go in it, just not if you want him to.
Well, yeah, I didn't know. And we've never really had it out when I've been around for him to play with or things like that.
Well, that's
so.
I put it in the
car. We had it on the
back
seat
with
the door open.
Back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can go in there if
exactly.
he wants.
And he decided he wanted to because it was dark and it was a good place for Kitten to take a little kitten nap.
We put a little litter box in there for him. Which
he used a couple times. He was a good boy.
Yeah, I learned this with Marius, my last cat, because he would not travel in a carrier. He hated carriers. But he would be fine if I just like carried him and put him in the seat.
Now Marius, you've told me, was a lot more peaceful about car trips though.
He was old. He was 13 years old. Yeah. So he was pretty
a good boy though.
If I was he was very needy too, so if I was sitting there next to him, he was okay. But if I like tried to keep him in the carrier, he
was not happy with that.
I think Kitten liked this trip.
I think so.
He slept a lot when we were at the hotel, but this is kind of a smaller hotel room than the one we stayed at in Baltimore.
Yeah, in Baltimore we had a suite.
Two bedroom.
Yeah, it was like we had a little living room plus we had the bedroom.
The exact same suite 2 years in a row.
I know, on the same floor. It was crazy.
The exact same room.
It was
bizarre.
It was fun.
Well, the first year it was like they screwed up the reservation, and then we ended up getting it for free. And this year, I think did we actually pick that one?
We did because I found an online deal where it was only $100 more, I think, for the whole trip to get the suite. And I was like, well, shoot, let's just get the suite then, because Kitten really liked it, and it was nice to have a little more space to spread out.
Yeah, so we're not going to Comic-Con this year, but I think...
Yeah, we spent so much money at it the last 2 years. I think it's kind of good to take a little break and, you know...
Well, I think we should definitely go next year.
I was kind of thinking maybe next year would be fun again.
Because now I'm thinking about it. I'm kind of missing it. You know?
I know. I was kind of thinking about that too, actually.
Like the beach was fun. But
yeah. The beach was more like a relaxing vacation versus like an action activity packed vacation.
And we didn't spend nearly as much
money. No, it was nice. Yeah. And that's partly why it was nice, because we didn't spend a lot of money. So that was good. It was nice to have like a nice little getaway.
But we did get to see Alien Covenant.
Yes. So you want to start talking about that?
Yeah.
Now, I have to preface this by saying we had very differing opinions on how good it was or wasn't.
Also,
so why don't you start it out?
So, we're going to talk about spoilers.
Yes, of course. Spoilers for everything.
So you know. So you haven't seen Prometheus.
No, I have not seen Prometheus.
So I think part of me,
and that might have influenced how
I
felt about it.
I was a bit leery of this movie coming in because of Prometheus. Because Prometheus was... It's kind of a shit show. It was just like, I don't know, like it's just a lot of elements of Prometheus that were like either implausible or just hard to
Now get. Sum up for me, because I haven't seen Prometheus, what was the basic storyline?
Well, the
for
basic
Prometheus?
Story is, so Prometheus is looking for I don't remember the exact details of why they're on this mission, but they're looking for this ship.
So they
decipher some code throughout history or something
that
leads them to this planet that's like got a ship of the engineers, which are the race in this movie.
And the
Waylon, the guy who was at the beginning of this movie talking to David, was like an old man in Prometheus, and he was going because he wanted to live forever, or whatever, and he wanted the engineers to tell him how to live forever. And that's when he got and that movie ended with like some proto alien like attacking them that like David helped create with the virus or whatever. And then that the scientist that Ellen or whatever her name was, like flying off to try and find the engineers because the engineers had tried to kill all of mankind or something. And so, I mean, the beginning was good. And
well, now, wait, you're switching to Alien Covenant? Or
yeah, so now this, we're talking about Alien Covenant. This movie, I enjoy the beginning of it. I like the setup. I felt like the storytelling was a bit better than it was in Prometheus because there was less like nonsense going on. Because it just seemed like Prometheus was just like everyone making bad decisions nonstop for the entire movie. Like
now, see, I haven't seen Prometheus, so I can't comment on that. We're gonna have
to. We're gonna have to do a podcast after we rewatched.
We're gonna watch all four Aliens, all of them, plus and Prometheus
because I think you might come around to my view of this movie.
Yeah, I think partly I wasn't influenced because I hadn't seen Prometheus. It was like a blank slate. I'd seen the other Alien movies. So, you know, what I loved about this movie, which is something that I think Matt maybe didn't love, but I loved, to me, it felt like they dropped us into this situation and it starts right away with a death. And I felt like I liked not having a lot of backstory given to us. I felt like I liked that they weren't wasting a lot of time on exposition. And I felt like, for me, I felt like this was more of a slow, artsy movie, kind of like the first one in a way, where it was more of a focus to me on the harsh realities of space, and that space kills a lot of people. And if you go adventuring in outer space, it's going to be unpredictable and dangerous, and a lot of people are going to die. And so I didn't mind so much that like a death took place before we were really invested in the characters and all that, because I felt like, to me, I felt like it just was like dropping us into the world like we were a fly on the wall. And I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah. See, the reason why I didn't really see it that way was because a lot of the exposition happened in Prometheus. Mm. Prometheus was heavy handed with the exposition.
I see. So like you the whole had first whole
20 or 30 minutes is like this briefing on the ship about all this stuff. And it's just like handing you all these ideas. So like
you mean in Prometheus it was?
In Prometheus it was. Okay. So this movie was just kind of taking up where Prometheus had left off. And, you know, for the problems I had with the movie, I enjoyed the first half of it. I liked the setup. Mm-hmm. I liked how they were doing it.
I
was on board with it up until the point where they you kind of realize what's going on, and the captain's like, David, if you don't tell me what's going on right now, I'm gonna kill you. And then he's like, okay, I'll tell you. And then he goes, and then he's just like,
follow me down to this just like, isolated place. Follow basement. Me
down to this place with all these face huggers that I've created, and just go look at it.
Right.
And he's like, oh, okay. And then he gets a face hugger on him, and the aliens are born.
Right. I thought that was idiotic as well.
That was the same kind of stuff that was happening in Prometheus, like every other scene, pretty much.
Right, because why would somebody make such a bad decision, especially when he already didn't trust David? Well,
yeah, like he was already at the point where it's like, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
And then, they've got the whole David and Walter thing going on, which I liked because you know why I liked it?
Why was that?
Because it was Data and Lore.
Oh, you're right. Yes, exactly. It was Data and Lore. It was the good and the evil, and the more evolved android and the less evolved but more maybe emotional creative android. Exactly.
It was exactly Data and Lore.
I really enjoyed that as well.
I think that's why I was really starting to like Walter. Mm-hmm. And then they do that twist at the end. Where it's like, it's so obvious because they don't show you how the fight between Walter and David ends.
Right, exactly. I saw that coming a mile away. It's like,
oh, well, Walter's...
So, spoiler alert, at the end, they try to trick you into thinking that Walter survives the fight, but then at the very end, they say, oh, no, it's David.
And the thing it's that really... Dumb. I mean, maybe I missed some stuff, but like, it's like an obvious twist, but like, nothing... Like, none of the details make any sense. Like, it doesn't make any sense how it happens because David has none of the injuries that Walter sustained. So it's almost like he took his consciousness.
No,
wait a minute.
No, he did chop his hand off. He chopped his hand off so he would look like Walter, and he gave himself similar scratches to look like Walter.
But do we know he did that, or are we just assuming he did that because he didn't?
No, they showed him once the David was on the ship, his hand was missing and his face was scarred. So, yeah. I mean, if he had showed up with both hands, they would have seen that it was David.
Right. Well, but like they never show him doing like
no,
how he
they don't show him doing it. And also, according to like the time lapse, it really doesn't seem like there was enough time for him to self-harm, to first of all, kill Walter, then give himself all the same injuries and then swap clothes with him.
Also,
and then the most improbable thing was that he had ingested some of the alien larvae.
Yeah, like he knew. And also.
So how would he have known ahead of time to do that?
The thing that I was looking at, too, is the one girl stabbed him in the chin with the necklace and then he didn't have that injury.
Now I'm wondering, was he wearing like a scarf when he came back on the ship? That I can't remember.
I kind of want to watch it again to see if I could they had any of those details, because I did not see any of them, and it just seemed like it was kind of haphazardly like I want to have this twist
exactly
bad ending. And it's like you never find out what happened to Walter either, which was
right.
like one of the few characters in that
right
in that movie that I really liked, because I really liked I liked the fact that he was basically Data.
Yeah,
because I mean he was less perfect
exactly
than David was, but and he even said like
and less human in a way. He was less creative.
Well,
he had more.
The thing that really made that connection for me was when he was like, when Walter was telling David, you made people uncomfortable. Because you were too
human,
too emotional,
too independent,
and that it's like exactly something Data would have said
to Lore, and that was true of Lore, because Lore was also
Data
dangerous.
Data pretty much
like,
said that to Lore in the episode where they find him,
possibly, yeah, or maybe Lore might have said it to Data. I think Lore said, "I made people
I think
too
originally Lore told Data that he was that Data had been made first.
Oh, maybe.
But that
I
was
can't
a,
remember.
They later revealed that that was a lie.
I can't remember how that happens or not happens. But yeah, but that bothered me. And the other thing that bothered me, too, was then at the very end, the captain is saying to David, who she thinks is Walter, oh, you're going to help me build my house, right? Why would David give her a blank expression? Why wouldn't he just be like, yeah, of course I am? And instead, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she realizes it's David. And then he lets her live. I don't understand that either. Like, why would you keep her alive if she figured
out who you are at that point, because he's putting her under.
He's putting her under, but why even put her under? Why not just kill her? Because like when she wakes up, she's going to say, hey, everybody, this is David.
I don't know.
So it was another element that just it didn't make any sense.
There's a lot. There's a lot to the ending, like
the last ending. Well, maybe
also,
the last third of the movie. I was thinking
about it, too. Like in the movie, it shows David basically killing all the engineers. Mm. It's like this is the super advanced race, the race that supposedly created life on Earth.
Oh,
so that means they've
okay.
been around for hundreds of thousands of years at least.
Okay.
Right. And they're the super advanced society.
I don't know, because they didn't explain that well.
And David manages to use their own virus against them to kill them all.
Okay.
Like that just seems like super like unlikely. But I don't know. It's just one of the... It was better than Prometheus. I enjoyed it more than Prometheus, but I was still I'm just kind of soured on the recent reboots of the like, even though it's the guy who directed it. What's his name?
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, Ridley Scott, who directed the first one, but did not direct Aliens, which was actually my favorite one.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely felt like it had more of the character of the first Alien, but I felt like. Yeah. Like I said, there's this expression in writing where you have to kill off all of your darlings, and they don't mean your characters, but what they mean is like if you have this kind of precious idea that you want to work out in your story, well, if it's not going to work out, you have to cut that idea. And that was the same kind of idea. I felt like he was too wedded to the idea of having the David Walter switch at the end, and it really didn't work out with the story, and it wasn't plausible, and he should have axed that
idea. Not to mention that the ending of this movie still does not connect it to his original Alien movie, because
now was this supposed to be a prequel to Alien?
Yeah, both of them are prequels.
I didn't know that at all because I don't remember Alien. That's why we have to rewatch it.
So like David has two face huggers and he's going to human. Now
I'm assuming they're male and female, right? Is that how it works, or they just have two?
They just he just needs one face hugger make more. But like the thing I was pretty sure that it was a crashed engineer ship in the original Alien, which we're going to watch here soon. We'll say more about this in our next podcast after I rewatch Alien and remind myself what happens in that movie. It was an engineer ship. So like, where does that engineer ship come from? We don't know now, because he's killed the entire race of engineers.
That's interesting.
So there shouldn't be any more ships out there. But right.
Maybe it was one that was fleeing the planet that he had already infected or something like that. But you're right. They should have tied that in better if they were going to make it a prequel in the first place. So anyway.
Let's move on.
Yes.
So
that's our thoughts on that.
Fifth Element is 20 years old.
It's hard to believe.
And they had a special release of it that we did not get to
see.
Well,
we were going to the beach, right? Is that why we didn't see it?
It was on a Sunday. And
I think you were bowling and I don't even remember. But yeah, it didn't work out.
But they are going to release a new version of it that's like a
Like a Star Wars re-release.
No, I think it's just like a high, like a HD master of the original.
I love Fifth Element. I would love to go see that in the movie theaters. And I feel like the one of the cultural movie theaters close by to us frequently does old films. So I feel like even if it wasn't the specific 20th anniversary re-release, I think they still show it a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Usually around Christmas time, I think they have it on.
So it's
actually
a 4K remaster of it.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to get that. I love that movie.
I love it too. I saw
that movie when I was like 17, and I remember getting out and calling my best friend at the time. It was like, you have to go see this movie, it's so good, from like a payphone outside the movie theater.
Aww.
I was like, this is such an amazing movie, like you have to go see it.
Yeah.
But
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great. It's
one of my favorites.
It's Luc Besson's best movie.
It's maybe like his only good movie.
No, because
no.
He did,
what else do you think is good?
He did Professional.
I didn't really like that much. I was not that big of a fan of The Professional.
Did you see the director's cut or the?
I don't know which one I saw.
The director's cut. That's a movie that was really hurt by its American release. The director's cut was actually a lot better because it shows the relationship between him and the girl.
Well, then I probably saw the director's cut.
Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of weird and creepy, their relationship anyway. And it was not my favorite movie.
Yeah. I like that. What else? There's at least one other movie, I think. Wait.
I can't think of any other ones that he's done that I like.
He did The Deep Blue, which I hated, but
I've met people that
swear they love that movie. So. Yeah. Yeah.
So you want to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which we also saw?
Yes, how long ago did we see that? We saw that like 3 or 4. We saw that originally like 2 weeks ago.
That might be why we skipped doing the podcast that week,
because
we were waiting to go see it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was on par with the first one, if not a little bit better. Probably.
I also really liked it, but I will say that to me, the first one was so comedic and funny, and I was expecting this one to be another funny movie, and this was one of the saddest movies I have seen in a long time, and it wasn't sad in a bad way, but it ripped my heart out.
Yeah,
and it was very difficult.
It was well done.
It was meaningful, but oh my gosh, it was hard.
I thought the comedy was enough to keep it entertaining.
Yeah, and I thought the comedy was good, and I thought the comedy balanced out the sadness, but it was really,
really
sad.
I really liked everything they did in this movie.
I mean, I liked everything they did. I'm not even saying I disliked it.
Well, I like that it was kind of a simplistic story that allowed time for the characters to kind of grow their relationships a lot.
I agree with that, too. And I like that, Karen Gillan had a bigger role in this one. She wasn't just screaming all the time. She actually had more character development.
I like that they're giving her more time because I really like her character.
And I really like that they developed the sister story between her and Gamala a lot more. And I thought it was very realistic. I thought it was gritty, but it was sad, but really good.
I think they did. They perfectly set up Nebula to really lead the Infinity War movie, because in the comic books, Nebula is the one that is primarily going after Thanos.
Oh, okay.
And so I think that they're really setting that up where she's going to be leading the attack on him.
Good.
Really.
Yeah, that would be exciting. I would love to see more.
So
of
that'll
her.
Be cool. I loved everything about this movie. I loved all the references. I loved all the Easter eggs, all five of the after credit scenes.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love this movie, but for me, it was difficult to watch just because of how sad it was. But it was, I loved it though, because it was sad scenes that weren't throwaway scenes and they weren't cheap shots. Like it was stuff like that just really meant a lot. Like when Gamora and Nebula were talking and Nebula's like, you know, oh my God, every time I lost a fight, you know, I had my brain ripped out. I had my eyes ripped out. I had my arm ripped off. And her sister's like, wow, I was just a kid too. And I wasn't thinking about you. I was just trying to survive and get through every day. And it was a lot of that, you know, very realistic dynamic of maybe kids who survive abuse and things like that. And it was really powerful.
I really like the scenes with Rocket and Yondu.
Oh, yeah. I really like that, too. Oh, my gosh. I know, because they were really relating to each other. And that's what made it to me even worse when Yondu died, because we didn't just see him as Peter's adoptive dad at that point. We saw him as friends with Rocket and somebody, maybe the only person who really understood Rocket and saw him for who he was. And just I felt like we got to see such a softer side of Yondu, like still a badass side of Yondu. But just like you really got to see the heart of who Yondu was in this movie, and it just made it so devastating when he died at the end.
They killed him because I think everybody was just loving him at that point.
Like, I know.
It was so good. Michael Rooker is such a good actor. He is severely underused in everything he's in. Like,
well, I felt like he stole the movie, and then I felt like that's what really ripped your heart out the most at the end when he died, because they had built him up so that you thought he was kind of like this kind of unlikable character from the first movie. And then when it turns out, like, you get to see him, you know, as like somebody with a true heart and a father and just a friend. Oh, it was so sad. Oh, and then they have the funeral for him at the end, and that was ripping my heart out too.
It's a very, very, very good, like very emotionally charged movie.
But so well done. So well worth
seeing. That's what makes it so sad.
Like exactly. Exactly.
When it's well done. And
because like I said, it wasn't any cheap shots. Like they really made you care about the character. And then the death also wasn't like completely meaningless, or it wasn't completely unnecessary either. You know,
I kind of hope so. Some of the Avengers movies are more like this in the future. I know I think Whedon's kind of done with the Avengers, but I think it's going to be
like the last Captain America one with the Winter Soldier kind of went this way a little bit.
Well, so, yeah,
not the Winter Soldier one, but the Civil War
Civil
one.
War. Well, Winter Soldier and Civil War were done by the same team.
Yeah, because so I felt like in Civil War, like when Tony's trying to kill Bucky and he's like, he killed my mom. Like, I could just feel the pain. It was like nothing else mattered in that moment. Like, that was really all that mattered. It didn't matter if he was brainwashed. It didn't matter. None of that mattered. Like, and also too, just like the really wrenching fight when Cap turns basically on his Avenger friends. I mean, that was painful and difficult. Like that these best friends were now suddenly taking sides and fighting against each other. And that's hard too to watch. So but again, it's well done. And that's what makes a really good story, is when it's not throwaway. It's not like, you know, trite with the sadness. I think
that's the important part though.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel like, cause like, I feel like the second Avengers movie was starting to feel like a lot of it was just kind of throwaway. Like, none of this really matters.
Remind me what happened in the second Avengers, because I get them all mixed up like now. Was that the one with the twins?
That's the one with the twins, and then the Quicksilver ends up dying.
That just felt cheap. Yeah,
it felt cheap because they introduce him. He's got like 10 lines, and then he dies.
Exactly. I totally agree.
It's not
agree.
Impactful. Like totally we don't really care agree. About this guy. He's like got a bad fake Russian accent. Like
Because they didn't build it up to the point where his death meant anything, and also his death, I think, didn't seem necessary to the plot.
Yeah, he never really had a significant conversation with anyone.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah, not even really with his sister. And so, like, exactly. That to me was just like a cheap shot, throwaway death that had no emotional impact.
I think that's a case of, like, that movie was really
But I did still enjoy that movie.
I enjoyed it, but I think that movie was a result of them trying to do too much in one movie. You're trying to introduce too many different characters.
Exactly, like too many new characters.
And deal with too many different plot lines to really...
Yeah, I agree with that.
In a single movie.
I agree with that.
Something like that should have been done like in a miniseries.
Or something, yeah. Or they should have maybe like introduced the twins in like their own movie and had like a Hydra movie or something. And yeah.
It's
like,
just it's too much to cram in a 2.5 hour
It is. Or at the very least, like don't kill him off. Like give him time to get developed in a later movie so that if you do decide to kill him off.
That was such a convoluted plot too. Like,
yeah.
You got this convoluted plot and all these new characters and all these different things.
So I mean it was enjoyable, but yeah, that's why I would say by contrast that's why Guardians 2 was so very good, because you know it just made you feel so much. And like I love that that new character who they introduced, who was Ego's assistant or his slave, I guess she was, but whatever, she was his prisoner, I don't know what she wasn't, definitely was not free, but I love that they did not kill her off. You know, they didn't make her a throwaway by killing her off.
I got that they were adding, like, she's getting added to the Guardians. So. It was good. It was just great.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Marvel, do more of this.
Yes.
More of this.
Do
less,
more of this.
Less
but,
Avengers 2, more of this.
But at the same time, oh my God, it ripped my heart out. I don't even know if I'm ever going to watch that one again, in all honesty.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it
you
again.
You probably will, but I don't think I will. It was great. I'm so happy I saw it, but it was too heavy for me to watch again.
Speaking of people dying, we saw Flash finale.
Flash finale and the Shield
and
finale.
And the Shield finale. Flash finale. First,
yeah.
What did you?
How
do you feel about it?
The
season's over.
I feel pretty good about it because, spoiler alert, again, we're gonna spoil it. I loved that HR gave his life to save Iris because, again, it was a very meaningful death. It was very selfless. It was a good out because, honestly, I didn't see how they were gonna find a way out once Iris died, other than resetting Flashpoint and making none of this last season have even happened. Because I'm like, if Iris is really dead, like, I just don't see how the team can move forward from that ever.
I love
that HR gave his life for her, and then even especially that they tied it into the fact that he had given away her location accidentally to Savitar, and that's partly why he did it too. I mean, I just loved it.
It was one of those things, like, I never saw that coming.
I didn't
and
either.
And then after it happened, I was like, well, I don't see any other way that they could have.
Exactly.
They could have wrapped
that's
this up.
That's good writing there. Yeah.
Yeah, because it really, I mean, it feels like they were kind of rehashing the first two seasons for a lot of this season of Flash.
I agree. I felt like a lot of this
season was kind
of
the same formula.
Down
like,
and
unbeatable
depressing.
Guy. You know, you get down and out, and then they find a way to beat him in the end. But, I mean.
Well, I felt like this season was a lot more depressing than the first two seasons, and I didn't necessarily like it that much.
Yeah.
Because I felt like they spent too much time on this depressing Iris is going to die.
They
Wally's
really,
depressed.
They really.
I mean, not Wally. Barry's depressed. Barry's not himself.
They showed her dying way too much.
I know. Like every episode.
We don't need to see any character
I know,
brutally murdered every episode.
That many times. And you know, what I did really like about the finale, though, was that the way Barry ended up defeating Savitar was by going back to his heroic roots and going back to finding love, finding forgiveness, being the true Flash. Because I feel like he hasn't been himself in the real Flash all season long.
Well, Snart really...
Yes,
really,
I love Snart!
he really foreshadowed that in the episode previously. So I knew it was going to do... they were going to do something with that.
Well, and I'm pleased to see Barry back to being who he's supposed to be, because I just really didn't enjoy this path down the dark side. And I know the thing is, you have to vary your writing on a series. You can't always have it be the same formula every
season.
Yeah,
but I don't want them
to
turn this into Arrow, because Arrow is just depressing.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't watch TV shows to be depressed. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's good when sometimes there is something so sad, like HR dying, but at the same time, you don't want the whole series to be depressing.
It's sad, but...
It was inspiring.
I was really inspired
by HR.
You still got Harry
alive.
Exactly. So Tom Cavanaugh is still going to be on the show.
Exactly.
Maybe they'll get Cowboy Wells next season. That would be.
I don't know. Or they might keep Harry around for next season too. I think they're maybe just gonna go back to Harry. But no. And I don't really think Barry's gone, because I did some research online. I'm pretty sure they're gonna bring Barry back pretty quickly in the next season.
Yeah,
and Caitlin will probably. I don't know if Caitlin's
because
gonna be a little bit less on the show, but she'll probably.
Well, because she still writes that article about him in 2024, so
exactly
that means he's gonna come back at some point. So we'll see.
And then disappear again. Well, one article was speculating that perhaps him disappearing now actually was it moved up in the timeline when he was going to disappear in 2024. Like this is it. Like he disappears in a.
He'll be back though. You can't have it without. I like Wally West, but I'm not sure how well he could carry the show.
Well, no, and the show really stars Barry, and it's about Barry's heart and soul and his ties to everybody else. Like he's kind of like the Nebulous, and everybody else is connected to him.
Yeah,
you know. So, but no, I mean, I cheated and I read online that nobody is leaving the show. None of the actors are leaving the show, so good, we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
They got
fine.
A good thing going.
They really do.
You're doing is working. Yes. Keep doing it.
Well, let's talk about S.H.I.E.L.D. then, because I feel like this whole season of S.H.I.E.L.D. brought back the S.H.I.E.L.D. that I loved. I felt like the last half of last season, it just went down the toilet.
My fear is people didn't watch the season and they're
because the last half of the second one was so bad.
Because last season was
it was terrible.
Yeah,
I feel like the writers quit halfway through last season because the writing went down the tubes and the dialogue, I mean, went down the tubes and. The storyline also went down the tubes.
Yeah, it was just kind of, and it was like about a bunch of characters that no one cared about.
And they didn't make you care about them.
I mean, having Ghost Rider helped a lot because Ghost Rider.
Oh, this season.
Awesome.
Yeah, with this season, Ghost Rider was awesome. It was good to have Daisy back on the team. I thought it was really cool that they spent so much time in the alternate world, in the Matrix world. I thought that was awesome. They really made, what's her name, a good character, Ophelia, or what
Ada.
Ada. Yeah.
Madam Hydra,
yes. So I loved it. I loved the finale. The only thing I'm mad about, I really, really thought they were going to bring Ward and Trip back for permanent characters, and I thought they were going to bring Mac's daughter on, because I thought when Ada had the matter thing where you could create matter from the Matrix, I thought they were going to create Trip and Ward and Mac's daughter
and
bring
Ghost
them in
Rider
too.
Was like, oh, something dark.
Well, she's
across.
Dark matter, right. But I'm they didn't have to make her be dark matter. They didn't have to do that. They could have just been like, she's fine, and now they're all back.
Bringing back Ward and Trip would have been nice.
I feel like Trip
got the rawest deal on
the
show.
He did.
He died real early, and he was. One of the coolest characters on the
show. He was.
Like, Mac was kind of like his replacement.
He was. Mac kind of was. Well, do you remember we saw Lucy Liu? I mean, not Lucy Liu. What am I saying?
Oh,
Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah.
God, I feel bad I said that. I'm sorry. Ming-Na Wen. And we saw her at Comic-Con. And she was saying how much everybody missed Trip. And how Trip was actually originally meant to just be character who was on one or two episodes, and he did so well and everybody loved him so much they actually brought him on for that whole season.
Yeah, they need to bring him back.
I know. And actually I loved seeing Ward as a good guy again, and actually as a good guy who had never even been a bad guy. I thought that was so sweet, and I thought that was a really nice resolution for his character, especially since they gave him such a shit storyline the last episode or the last season. And didn't even kill him off well. They didn't even wrap up his whole little alien devastation storyline well at all. They just kind of gave up on the series last season.
Like,
well, you know what, though? The first half was good, and something happened. I know something must have happened production-wise, because the whole writing, it was just like they didn't even have their writers anymore, and they were just trying to make it up.
I wonder if it was Joss working on Avengers or something.
I wonder.
And not having time to
kind of
lead the way, and they just kind of got lost a little bit.
Yeah, because it was just like, it was like they didn't even have an outline for what was
supposed
to happen.
It was really
kind
of directionless, like with
the last
what
half
they
of
were
the
doing
season.
With it.
It was like they set so much good stuff up in the first half of the season, and then they just threw it all away. Yeah. They had no idea what to do with it. So, yeah. But so anyway, I was pretty pleased with the S.H.I.E.L.D. finale and with the Flash finale. Yeah. You know.
Those are the only two shows I'm really interested in watching right now on television.
Are there any other ones I'm watching? I can't think if there's any other ones. Oh, well, I've been very happy that Golden Girls is now on Hulu, and I've been watching that in order from the beginning. Oh, I love that show.
I'm looking forward to the next season of Supergirl when it comes on
Netflix. Oh, yeah, when
it gets to Netflix. Not really.
Oh, Doctor Who. We're watching Doctor Who. I love the new season of Doctor Who. This is the season that Capaldi should have had from the very beginning. The writing is like
writing's classic, on point this season.
It's like classic modern Doctor Who writing, where it has heart, it has soul.
From last season.
Yeah, it has actual storylines. It has depth. It has meaning. Like, this is the Doctor Who that everybody fell in love with, starting with Eccleston in the modern age of Doctor Who. Well, and this is why, because it was meaningful.
Yeah. Well, it's also
it's scary again.
What's his name?
Who?
The guy who's...
Narwhal?
No, the guy who's been ruining the show.
Oh, Moffat.
Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat is actually heading the show. Instead of writing every single episode, he's actually getting other people to write for it.
He had a couple other writers last season, and those episodes were slightly better, but he still didn't have a good arc for the season as a whole.
He's still writing some of the pivot episodes.
But they're a little better.
This most recent episode, but it is a lot better.
And he has an overall arc for the whole series,
at least. Doing what he should have been doing, which is writing some of the key episodes that had the overall story. And then he's letting other people write individual episodes.
I really, though, if we're going to talk about what he should have done, he should have stepped away when he finished Matt Smith, because he didn't have a storyline or an arc. It was like he really didn't know what to do with the new Doctor.
I think he had a lot of success really fast, and he kind of ran out of ideas for a while.
And he didn't have the humility to step back.
Yeah, he didn't have the option. Maybe they were pushing him too much to...
Well, I don't know. Or maybe, frankly, they didn't have enough oversight and they gave him too much authority when they should have put him on check and said, this sucks.
I think maybe they put too much on him. Because, I mean, a lot of great people can really get bogged down when you have that much pressure to succeed and you're credited as the only person responsible for this thing.
And, I mean, that's understandable. Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like as a writer, and I feel like it's even more important when you're committed to a series and it's not your creator-owned creation.
You know, as much as I hated having the year off, I think it helped.
I think so, too.
I think it helped them refocus.
And I kind of wonder if they maybe haven't taken to heart, the BBC hasn't taken to heart all of the negative feedback he's gotten since he's had Capaldi, and that it's directed at Moffat. And I feel like maybe they've put more supervisory measures in place on him this last season.
Prevent him from going George Lucas.
Yeah, because that's exactly what happened. And I think they realized the show was going down the tubes. I mean, even Capaldi was criticizing that the show was going down the tubes.
I think he was acknowledging it.
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks. To be fair, I don't think the show is going down the tubes. I think it was heading,
Capaldi was saving it.
There was definitely a decline there.
I'm going to say the only thing saving it the last couple seasons was Capaldi and what he brought to the role of the Doctor. Because I love him as the Doctor. But I don't think any of the other writing or any of the other characters supported him.
He's one of those guys that he loves the character.
He does.
When you see him talking to people, and when he meets fans and stuff, he is the Doctor.
Yes.
To them.
He takes that responsibility. He's been the heart of this show. And I've read too that he contributed a lot to the creation of the character of his Doctor these last couple seasons. He brought in the guitar playing, that's the way it should be too. Exactly. And I feel like if it weren't for Capaldi, I feel like this show would have been canceled, in all honesty. But I feel like he really saved the show just by being so brilliant as the Doctor. He made it worth watching
for the last two seasons. Until they could refocus and bring it back together.
Exactly. And I feel I'm sad that he's leaving at the end of this season, because I wish he could have gotten three decent seasons that he should have had. But I'm so grateful that at least he gets one good season to really have a real Doctor Who run, you know?
It'll be a good send-off for him, I think.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Yeah. So last thing we wanted to talk about. It was Mother's Day.
Yes.
And me and Kitten and all the rats.
And the birds.
And the birds got you Lego Dimensions.
Yes!
It's finally cheap enough where I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off buying it.
Well, exactly. And where I would have wanted you to buy it, because I didn't want you to spend $80, $90, $100 on it.
Yeah.
I've wanted it for a long time because I really like the Lego
games. We've wanted it since before it came out.
Because it had Doctor Who levels in it, which I don't have yet.
There's no other Lego game that has Doctor Who levels in it.
Exactly. And also, I like not just the Doctor Who, but that it crosses so many movies and TV shows that I like. It's got Wizard of Oz. It's got Back to the Future. It's got the DC superheroes. Yeah. So
I mean, I thought it was cool, but it's also kind of like, I think a lot of the Toys to Life games are just like a way, like they're just a way to make money.
Well,
and
yeah,
like, I get that, but like,
well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm really having fun with it, but it is way easier than any other of the Lego video games that I've played. It's almost just kind of like you're playing out the story and there's not any real puzzles to solve because it's just kind of like the fun is supposed to be you're playing through it as the characters. Now, I'm only in the Simpsons world. Maybe it's going to get harder as you go, but I'm not 100% sure it will, but I'm still having fun with it, so I don't mind. But I will say that would be my criticism, and that would be, I wonder if that's maybe why it didn't do so well, because it's simply not challenging. So who's going to spend that much money on it?
I think at $40 it's a deal.
Yes,
at
$40 it is a deal.
I think
at
$100 you're really stretching it.
And also,
and I think a lot of the price comes from the fact that it comes with like a whole set of Legos. Like,
yeah.
Legos are not cheap.
They're not, but they're also overpriced.
They're fun, but they're
I mean, I think Lego makes a hefty profit because I do not think it costs that much to
I mean, they're
cast some little plastic
little
molds.
Pieces of plastic.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, Legos are very expensive in and of themselves. But now what I'm wondering is, I don't know how many levels the game actually comes with.
I think it's going to come with like a main story, and it probably comes with like 3 or 4 packaged worlds,
like it definitely
could,
has
you
a
could
Simpsons
go into
world.
Like the Marvel world, and you could into the DC world,
but
remember?
You couldn't get into any of the story elements. All it was,
well, we
was
didn't
like
really
the map.
Spend that much time in it.
No, but you couldn't. But trust me, because I played these Lego games before. It nothing was unlocked to get into that world to do other than like the main map.
I know
the
kits. Some of them are just like characters, but some
of
them
some
say
are
they have a whole level.
Well, so that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering how many levels actually come with the main package, or if it's more like they're just trying to bleed money out of you that you have to buy all these level packs
in
order to.
This is why I was kind of skeptical of this whole game.
Exactly.
It feels like they've taken a game and they've chopped it up into little bits and then they're selling it to you a piece at a time.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm wondering, because I think maybe I read that the main Lego Dimensions game might come with 1 or 2 Doctor Who levels, but you can get like 10 levels if you buy the level expansion.
Yeah.
But I think it might, if I play through the story in order, you might get like 1 or 2 levels for each world.
What I assume is that like as you play through, you'll get like one level
exactly
for each expansion.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then it's be like, and then
that's
you'll get
what I'm thinking
additional
too.
To kind of encourage you to buy.
Well,
the
that's the point. Yes.
Packs.
Exactly. Well, because like in The Wizard of Oz, I only got like 1 or 2 levels, and there's more places that you can go in that world, but you have to have the characters to unlock them.
Yeah, it definitely did not seem as challenging as previous Lego games.
No, it's really not very challenging at all.
I played like the Batman 3
game. I know, and you got so frustrated.
I got so frustrated. I couldn't get out of the first level. I was like, I can't do this.
I know. And I really like the Lego games. I kind of know how they work, but even I get stuck at points and I have to look up a walkthrough. So, but this one, it's like, it's almost like, as of yet, I don't even really see that there's any puzzles. It's kind of like telling you what to
like
do
it's
the
more
whole time.
Geared towards like a younger
little
audience,
kids, maybe,
because it's like it seems like a large, like a big portion of it seems to be like
building
the stuff yourself. Anyway,
yeah. But I mean, it's still fun. I'm really excited Matt got it for me, because it's, I'm so glad I have it, and it's going to be fun just to play through.
I kinda
it.
I kind of knew all these Toys to Life. Yeah. Like they start out real expensive.
Yeah.
And then they never sell off their inventory.
Mm-hmm,
because
exactly.
Just, you can't get people to spend that much money on
it. No, no. Like,
and
I
wait for the price to drop.
Exactly. So that's why I've been telling him for months or years since whenever it came out. I'm like, we're just going to wait. We're just going to wait, because eventually the price is going to come down, and then we'll be able to get
$40.
$40 brand new on Amazon. And I think at this point I've noticed on eBay, you can get like bundles now of like level and character packs for a lower price.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we'll see more updates on that as I play through it more, but it is fun. And I love having like just the Batman and the, what's her name? Freestyle, something like that.
Wild style.
And Gandalf are your three.
Wild style seem like the most fun.
I kind of like Batman is the most fun, but I love having all three of them, because it's fun to watch their interactions and like their little stuff.
Yeah.
So
They really should have dropped the price on the starter pack way earlier. I think it probably would have moved a lot more.
I think so too.
Because because
you still would have made a ton of money if you could have hooked people in with the starter pack. People would have wanted to buy the expansions and the character packs.
Yeah.
But when you have the threshold so high for the first for just the base pack,
if you get people in the door cheaper,
apartment communities where they get you in with a low rent for the first year or something.
These collector item, like these collector Toys Life BS, like you got to get people in for cheap and then you can hook them. Then you can sell them all kinds of crazy nonsense.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's how every card game works. You buy like a deck of cards for $10.
Exactly. And then you spend like $5,000. I know.
Boosters on it.
I know. Exactly. So,
yeah.
But so should we about wrap up the show for tonight?
That's going to, we went a little bit longer because we had a lot more to cover, but
It was our,
I think either next
bonus podcast.
I think next time we might be, it might be
Wonder Woman might be out. Yes. I'm so excited.
Yeah. And we'll have to be doing the Alien.
Oh yeah. We'll have caught up on several of the original Alien movies by then.
I managed to get all four of the first Alien movies on Blu-ray for $24.
Yeah, I was excited about that because I've really been wanting to rewatch them. Yeah, so.
It was unopened too, so I was like, oh,
that's pretty
wow.
exciting. Yeah.
So anyways, thanks a lot for listening.
If you want to support us, you can feel free to donate. Not really support us, but if you like the podcast, consider making a donation to our two favorite charities. We have Small Angels Rescue, which is the nonprofit that's a no-kill, all-volunteer organization that rescues and rehomes gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, and our favorites, the ratties.
And Extra Life unites thousands of players around the world in a 24-hour gaming marathon to support Children's Miracle Network hospitals. And all donations you get to that go directly to patient care.
Yep, for patients who can't afford their medical bills. So,
Thanks for listening, guys.
We'll see you next time. Bye.